Help me.
But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Good morning, welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shortell. Here today with co-host and producer Stu Schrager. Good morning, Stu.
Good morning, Tom. It's good to sit right across from you and be in the same room together.
I know. We played telephone tag last week, right?
We did. Yeah. We did.
Apologize for any inconveniences in audio or whatever that the phone sometimes causes, you know. So anyway, I'm here now and happy to be back.
When you do those call-ins lately, you're calling in from, I think, Old Brookville or Brookville, and
yeah,
it's like another country.
It's like another planet. I know. It's. I don't know if it has anything to do with the real phone. I mean, my cell phone doesn't work well up there. I don't think they have a lot of towers, and the building I'm in is like a bomb shelter. I mean, you can't get any messages in or out. It's always an adventure trying to, you know, if I run out of something to call a purveyor, you know, I got to run to the office. I can't just use my cell phone. And I'm around the building a lot. Sometimes I'm not in the kitchen itself. You know, we do some things outside, barbecue, stuff like that. So it's always a challenge trying to get a phone call out of there. If you stand in the right spot on the golf course, like it's just off the 18th green, you can get some reception. But if you take two steps in either direction, it just cuts out. It's weird.
So you said the word adventure, and I think that's the word of the day. Mm-hmm. Because playing it with fire has been an adventure.
Oh, it has.
At least for me.
Yeah, no, it's been a great adventure.
So
yeah.
I believe it's been on for like 10 years, if not more.
Yeah, it's over 10. I think we're in our 11th year.
And you started with a different co-host, legendary on-air host Malibu Sue, who was with your co-host for many, many years. She went on to some other things in her life. The show went through a couple of transformations, including being 45 minutes or a half hour at one point.
Yeah, that was weird, right? How am I supposed to get all this information out in a half an hour? It's
one does not know.
No, it's just impossible.
But the great announcement and the further adventure here with Playing with Fire is that a lot of you might not be hearing the show this week, because we are moving from the 8 o'clock hour to the 9 o'clock hour,
yes,
as we have previously been.
Yeah. We got bumped down to 8 o'clock for reasons that only management knows, and now we're bumped back up for reasons only management knows.
And so then there's going to be another really cool announcement coming around August 10th for all our 1100 WHLI listeners, and I'm not allowed to talk about it right now except to say, something mighty big is happening here in the world of radio and WHLI.
Wow. I mean, I'm excited to hear about it, too. I'm in the dark. And just don't tell me until the 10th of August.
There you go.
You know, let me know.
And
yeah,
don't worry. We're not putting your picture on the wall.
No. As soon as you get your picture on the wall around here, that's the first indication that you're on your way out. So hopefully we're safe for another couple of weeks.
So I have to say that it's been very exciting that we've been having a lot of dialogue with our listeners.
Yeah.
Writing us at fire@whli.com, fire@whli.com. And one of the more prolific writers to us and fans of the radio station is Ron Boning. And I'd like to quickly read an email that he sent us. And then I want to get how this translates into medicine, which is
my field of expertise.
Food, wine, lifestyle, and now medicine.
Yeah, all right. I'm here. Dr. Shodell.
So this is from Ron Boning. Hi, Stu and Tom. On today's show, July 25th, so that was last week's show, Tom mentioned mustard on hot dogs and said he liked mustard with a little horseradish, which I once told you about, Bauer's mustard. So I'm going to have to research that, but apparently Bauer's must be a mustard.
Well,
that
I'm familiar with them, yeah.
So is that a German mustard or?
I think it's produced here, but it probably started out there, I would think. You know, that's where all the worst is.
So Ron goes on to say, I am 80 years old. My mother made the best coleslaw. It had very little mayonnaise in it, if any. And last week, Tom mentioned he makes coleslaw with a vinaigrette.
Mm-hmm.
Tom, would you share that vinaigrette coleslaw recipe with us? Trust me, I'm not going into a competitive business with you.
Oh, that's good to know. It's good to know. I mean, the last thing I need is another competitor, you know, especially in the coleslaw area. But, you know, the coleslaws are funny. Slaws are salads, really, you know, and they can be made with anything. I mean, I do a vegetable slaw, you know, that I make sometimes. I'll use broccoli and carrots. And, you know, again, you know, what I try and preach here on Playing with Fire is to use your imagination. And that's really all that fine cooking is imagination gone completely off the rails. And then, you know, what happens is you'll find out that some of your ideas are great and some of them stink, you know, and you'll eliminate the ones that weren't so good and you know, capitalize on the ones that were. As far as a vinaigrette recipe goes, I would use, I like to use different vinegars for different things. I think that some vegetables are more assertive than others, you know, and they require a little more flavor, acquire a little less flavor than you want to just to taste the vegetable. Other vegetables, like when you do a coleslaw, like cabbage, it's kind of a mild flavor. It needs some spunk, you know. So I like to use like a white balsamic vinegar in there, and maybe so. Let's say you're going to use. It's hard for me to give you amounts without like seeing it in front of me. But if you took a head of cabbage and and cut it down to a coleslaw, and let's say you're going to put some shredded carrots in there, and maybe some a little onion, a little finely sliced red onion in there for color. I like to use a little parsley in there or chive. Then I would make a vinaigrette. I would make probably about, for a head of cabbage, you probably need about a half a cup. And vinaigrettes to me are basically, there's two types. There's one-third vinegar, two-thirds oil. And then you have others like rice wine vinegar and stuff. When you have rice wine, it's really mild. I do 50-50 oil and vinegar and a little bit of sugar. But for the one that he was talking about, I would use for a half a cup, I would use probably about, maybe a third of that would be white balsamic vinegar. And two-thirds of that would be a good olive oil. And then I would emulsify it with like maybe a half a teaspoon of mustard in there, a little bit of salt and pepper. And I like to use celery seed in coleslaw, I think so.
Drive the biggest and best yet. Remember, a toy is a symbol of hope. Please donate today.
And Sunday for mini golf, Facebook.
Since its founding in 1995, the foundation has awarded over $84 million to over 4,400 recipients. I ask that you consider a donation to this worthy organization. Information.
Port Lee Zeldin for governor to take back New York State. Gourmet fare, live music, plus special guest speakers. $125 per person. Must RSVP to 516-983-5885 or dwz1@hotmail.com. Donations accepted at ourfreedompack.com.
Have too much vinaigrette on it, just drain it off. It's not a big deal, you know. And if you don't have enough, you can obviously make a little more and add a little more. But that would be my recipe for a half a cup. I would use one-third of it. You know, just think of it in terms of a fraction. Regardless if you're making a cup, a gallon, whatever. It's one-third of acid and two-thirds oil. And then whatever flavorings you want to use, you can make them in a blender and you can add basil if you want a little basil flavor in it. Like I like to use basil with carrots. If I made just like a carrot and raisin slaw, I would use a little basil in the green. Sets off a nice little pale green color with the carrots. For something like broccoli that has a little more spunk to it, you know, you could use a stronger vinegar, like a champagne vinegar or a cider vinegar or something like that. Cider vinegar is always good with coleslaw. So, what was his name? Ron, you said?
Yes.
Yeah, Ron. I would advise Ron to give those a try and make a, you know, the great part about vinaigrettes, you know what you can do? They sell these little deli containers. I use them in the restaurants all the time. They sell them in half quart and quart. And they come with these tops that fit on them. And it's a great way to make vinaigrette. So I'm going to give you stupid chef trick number 6,742, right? So you take one of those little deli containers and you see through it, right? So you'll fill it up like a little less than a third because you want room to shake it, right? So you fill it up a little less than a third and then you put two-thirds oil in there, right? And a little bit, let's say a half a teaspoon of mustard, like a Dijon or something along those lines. You don't want grainy mustard. And then whatever, you know, salt and pepper, you know, if you want to dice a little onion, you put that in. And you can just snap that lid on and shake it up, you know, and then you have it. You take a marker and put on the top balsamic vinaigrette, right? Put it in the refrigerator. Then you take a second one and you make a second one with, let's say, extra virgin olive oil and dark balsamic vinegar, and you shake it up and you put it in there. And you can make four or five of these vinaigrettes. You know, like my aunt used to buy wishbone Italian dressing all the time.
Right.
And you'd open up her refrigerator and she'd have like the all the usual suspects, the Italian, the French, the Russian, you know, all these. And you can do the same thing, but you do it on your own. These deli containers, they're great. They, you know, they're spill proof. You know, you could drop it and the cap stays on, you know, and you can mark the top of it with whatever dressing you want and just shake it up when you're ready to go, and you have it for, you know, it keeps for weeks. It's vinegar. There's nothing in there that's going to go bad, you know.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so it's kind of a fun way to do it, you know. You can even do salads like that. You can take the quart container, put like little baby greens in there, let's say like a baby arugula or whatever, just a little bit of dressing and shake it up right in the thing and dump it out, and you got a salad ready to go, you know. So these are the little things that you can do at home that you can, you know. A guy once told me that, you were talking about golf, right? And he said the only thing that amateurs can really do and can get almost as good as pros is putting, you know? And it's the same thing with some of these little tricks. I mean, you know, most home cooks are never going to be able to cook at the level I cook at because I have 300,000 hours in or whatever, you know? But you can approach some things that we do in restaurants, you know, by just using these little tricks and taking these suggestions and using them, you know, in your own kitchen. And you can look real good, real quick, you know, without, you know, having to put all the time and effort into the kitchens that I have. You know, there's tremendous amount of tips on the Internet. The Internet's loaded with information, you know, so you can become a pretty good, you know, amateur cook doing that. You know, we have a guy at one of the places that I'm at who knows everything about everything. He's the most confident human being I've ever met in my life. And he told somebody one day that he could cook as well as I could, you know. And I wasn't even mad. I started to laugh. I'm thinking, you know, I'm 52 years in the kitchen. You've never been in a commercial kitchen in your life, you know. And he was saying, well, you know, his reasoning was that he's eaten in all these high-end restaurants, and he's absorbed so much information that he taught his housekeeper how to do all this stuff, and now his housekeeper could actually open up a 3-star restaurant. And I'm like, well, ask him if he's ever flown to Los Angeles. And when he says yes, ask him if he's ever landed the plane, because there's a big difference between flying to Los Angeles and flying to Los Angeles. You know, it's like eating in restaurants and working in restaurants is a completely different story. And I promise you, if I brought him into the kitchen on a Saturday night, he would soil himself at the sight of the first order that came in. You know, what am I going to do? You know, anyway, enough of that. But it's I marvel at that the confidence level of some people.
So that leads me to Stu's medical tip for the week.
All right.
And we're talking about mustard, and I was told that mustard is a good cure for cramps, meaning muscle cramps.
Really?
And I'm led to believe, because I was amazed by this, and I was telling somebody in the office, and one of the girls came to me and said, it's because of the turmeric.
Turmeric, yeah.
And that is good for
muscle cramps.
Yeah, as is quinine or something, so or tonic water or whatever.
All right, so the next time I stretch in the morning too fast and I Charlie horse my calf, I'm going to scream for the Frenches.
I'm told to take a spoonful of mustard
and a
sip of water, and it immediately resolves the issue.
It's the first thing that comes to my mind when I cramp is profanity. You know, mustard would probably be like eighth on the list of things I'm thinking of, you know, as I'm doing the tarantella across the living room floor with a cramped calf.
Well, we just got done with Ron's exchange with us,
which
was very nice. And Ron, we appreciate every week your interaction with us.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
And now we have a really nice letter from Angela Scanato.
Uh-huh.
And she writes, good morning, Tom and Stu. My husband and I are regular listeners and love your show. Although with your new time slot, I sometimes miss the beginning as I shower and get ready for church. So now I'm afraid, I'm interjecting here, that now that we're moving to the 9 o'clock hour, I hope you don't miss the show. But if you do, if you go to WHLI.com, the website, there is an option to listen to previous episodes. So we have a podcast here, and understand that this show going for 10 years, we probably originated podcasts.
We might have, yeah, we might have. And I'll, you know, if I don't know if it's a Catholic church or a Protestant church, but I do know that they do have different time slot for services, you know. I vaguely remember that from my years as a recovering Catholic. But it's kind of, I think it's important, you know, to go to church or services or temple, you know. But I think it's important to listen to the show also. So I think you can manage the two if you can.
You know, it's funny, and I was talking about the fact that you can go to WHLI.com and see previous to listen to previous episodes. Unfortunately, as in many situations, there's always change, so there was different storage of the radio show over the years. Mm-hmm. So we actually don't have an archive of some of the original shows, which 10 years plus later would be really cool to go back to. And we've interviewed some pretty cool people along the way.
Oh, yeah.
Frank Pellegrino from Rayos, who passed away a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Emerald
Martha Stewart, Alex Guascinelli,
right? Jesse Bon Jovi.
Steve Vai.
So it's been an interesting ride, and I hope it continues for a long time. So Angela goes on to say, unfortunately, I waited too long to compose this email, and I don't remember all that was mentioned on the show Sunday morning that I wanted to include. She was kind enough to actually send us pictures of her garden,
which is really cool.
She did some raised garden plantings, and she'll talk about that. I am sending photos of my garden. It's not much, but we don't have much property in Wantagh. This year, we decided to make new raised beds and put them in a different area of the yard. I have four boxes with tomatoes, beefsteak, cherry, eggplant, zucchini, pepper, basil, lots of grated cheese.
I don't know how you grow grated cheese.
And some of the oil used to cook. It's simple. It's yummy. Simple but yummy. I haven't heard Tom mention basil. Any suggestions for cooking with basil? We plan on trying pesto again. Mm-hmm. Our first attempts weren't that great. You both are so interesting. I love both of your life adventures, and interaction between the two of you is great. Since my husband retired last year, we're in a new season and a bit of adjustment. We especially love hearing about wines and the making and tasting of them, as well as the restaurant business. Our son lives on the North Fork and is a residential vineyard manager.
Wow.
And also makes wine for some of his clients. He often mentions many of the winemakers that Tom does. It's a small world out there. We have been to some of Tom's restaurants. Tom Tom, great food in Wantagh. It was a few years ago for my birthday, but very memorable. I had lamb chops, and they were amazing. We also had a wonderful experience last year to the date today at Allure for our daughter-in-law's birthday. Since it was during the pandemic, it was especially wonderful being together, 12 of us, and our waitress was very attentive, and the food was excellent. We had a feast. Actually, we will be going there tomorrow night to celebrate her birthday again. It was that great. How did Tom choose its name? We keep on planning on visiting Amano. We were so very disappointed when Tom's special menu for Amano was canceled. Was that last Valentine's Day? And off air, I had talked to Tom, and I think he was talking that he does a number of wine dates, wine pairings. And Tom will get into it once I finish reading this email. The first date wasn't good for us, but then it was changed, and we plan to attend. I was especially disappointed because I was planning to attend with just my son, and I don't get opportunities to be with him one-on-one. We hope Tom plans on doing something like that again. We will be there, probably with my hubby. Although we visit our son's home often, we have two grandchildren, 3 and 5. We never seem to get to Amano. One of these days, hopefully. We never made it to Jewel, unfortunately. But I did get to see a photo of that amazing men's room.
Oh, yeah.
My boss at the time was going to a land surveyor's dinner there and told me about it. And just as he was leaving, one of the men said that he had to visit the men's room. And my boss remembered the request. It was kind of funny. You had to know him. Thank you both for a wonderful listening experience every Sunday morning. Angela Scarnato.
Well, thank you, Angela. That was a very nice letter. I really appreciate your interest, and You know, so let me address a couple of things. First of all, the cancellation of the dinner. I, if I'm not mistaken, it had to do with COVID and it was a wine dinner that wasn't selling very well. So we decided to postpone it indefinitely. And then it got busy again and, you know, I never really rescheduled it. So I do apologize for that. The name Allure, I'm kind of a stickler for names. And I like to choose names that are memorable, that kind of say something about the place. Like, you know, Cool Fish was basically a seafood restaurant. And anybody that didn't get that was, you know, probably shouldn't come. But the Allure, you know, and Amano means by hand in Italian, you know. And so we try and do everything from scratch at Amano. And that's how the name came. It kind of relates to what's going on there. Allure to me was a play on words. It was hopefully there was the allure of the Peconic Bay, the visuals there, how it looks out onto the bay and how beautiful that is. And also allure is what you use to catch fish. So you had that double entendre there between the alluring, you know, look of the bay and the lure that, you know, caught what you're about to eat. Again, with the emphasis on seafood. And as far as basil, cooking with basil, my advice is throw it in. Just throw it in there. You know what I mean? If you have, you know, basil leaves, you know, sometimes I'll put them in whole, you know, in like a rustic kind of Italian tomato sauce. And I don't find them offensive at all. You know, most people cut them up, and I do too. But there's times where I just throw them in whole. And if you didn't have success with pesto, I'll give you Tommy's secret recipe. Again, it's all about amounts. I don't give like cups or teaspoons because it really depends on how much you want to make. But again, it's 3-2-1. If you remember 3-2-1, you'll never screw up a pesto again. So it's three parts basil leaves. Press down, so you want to compact them, you know, because basil tends to be, you know, fluffy like spinach, so you want to press it down. Three parts basil, two parts cheese, grated cheese. I use Pecorino Romano. You can use Reggiano, whatever. I suggest Romano. And one part extra virgin olive oil. And then if you want to add, you know, two or three cloves of garlic, you can do that. I always add a couple of spinach leaves in there also, and what that does is it keeps it green. Because sometimes pesto, if you don't add spinach or ascorbic acid, you know, sometimes I'll use a tab of vitamin C. You can put it, if you have vitamin C around the house, take one tablet of vitamin C and throw it in there. That'll do the same thing. It'll keep it green for you, you know. And so you take that and you put it in a food processor and process it up. If you want pine nuts in there, you can throw some pine nuts in there. I tend to not do that only because everybody's got nut allergies these days, it seems. So rather than, you know, have somebody, you know, have a problem, I leave it out. I don't think they're necessary. But anyway, that's it. 3-2-1. Three parts basil, two parts cheese, one part olive oil. And if it's a cup, then you got, you know, three cups of pressed down basil, two cups of cheese, you know, one cup of, let me start over. If it's a cup, you're going to have one cup of basil, right? Then you're going to have 2/3 of a cup of cheese and 1/3 of a cup of oil. And then just buzz that down with a little bit of garlic in the Cuisinart there. And you got it. You know, I would suggest if you're going to keep it in the refrigerator for any amount of time, you put a little film of olive oil over it and then wrap it up in saran wrap or put a plastic, you know, if you have Tupperware or whatever, put a plastic top on it. If not, just use it immediately. You can incorporate that in a little bit of stock or cream or something, or you can use it just by itself. You know, pesto, one of my favorite uses for pesto, believe it or not, is in sautéed corn. And so I'll take a little corn, I'll cut it off the cob, you know, and then we'll saute that corn in a little bit of butter and olive oil mixture. And just take a little bit of stock, like chicken stock or chicken broth, and put it in there. And then put some pesto in there with some fresh tomatoes, and you have a great little side vegetable. You have a great vegetable put under fish or serve with, you know, lamb or eat by itself, whatever, nice vegetarian thing. But you have the yellow there, you have the red with the tomatoes, and you have the green with the pesto. It's beautiful, you know, beautiful color and stuff. So, but again, it's kind of my thought with herbs and spices are I have green and I have brown when I think of herbs and spices. When I think of green things, I think of things that go with green, like white, pink. You know, so I would use it with flounder. I would use it with salmon. I would use it with cauliflower, vegetables like that. Green goes with green, so you can use basil with broccoli.
What's the leaf that's always in my red tomato sauce?
That's basil. Yeah. And then, you know, brown spices, you know, I think of darker foods, you know, like when cumin and cinnamon, I think of meats, I think of, you know, chopped meat, or I think of a chili, or I think of, you know, a seared steak or something like that. So, I mean, that's a little more on the sophisticated level when you think about that. I was talking to Steve Vai about it one time, and he told me that he can actually write a song in his head without the guitar or a piano, because he can hear the notes. I mean, he's so familiar with them. And I could relate, because I can do the same thing. I can create a dish in my head. If I'm on an airplane, sometimes I'm bored, you know, and I'll start writing recipes down, because I know what it tastes like. I know what goes with what, or what, I think I know what goes with what anyway, you know. There are some people out there who disagree with me on that for sure. But so it's once you get real familiar with something, you know, an herb like basil, you know, just try it out with things. I mean, I even use it sometimes in a marinade. You know, there's a great marinade for steak that I use, and it's equal parts of soy sauce, lemon juice, and let's say, it's hard for me to give numbers because I use a quart of each, which marinates about 120 steaks, you know. So chances are you're not marinating too many steaks like that at home. But if you use the, let's say, a cup of each, right? So you use a cup of lemon juice, a cup of soy sauce, and a cup of olive oil. All right, then put that in a bowl, and then use 3/4 of a cup of Worcestershire sauce. We call it L&P because it's Liam Perrins, you know. And maybe about half a cup of brown sugar.
So wait, three quarters of a cup of Worcestershire
sauce.
And
yeah.
A half. Or a quarter,
about
you said?
A half a cup of brown sugar, dark brown sugar, and then maybe about 3 or 4 tablespoons of garlic powder, and about 6 tablespoons of chopped basil, and believe it or not, about 2 tablespoons of sriracha, that chili sauce from Thailand, and just let the steak, you know, whatever you have, you know, sirloin or flank or whatever, marinate that overnight. If you leave it in too long, what happens is that the marinade creeps into the meat too far, and you can't really get it rare and actually cooks it, because there's salt in the soy sauce, and that draws moisture out. And moisture is what keeps the meat red and rare on the inside. You know, once you overcook it, you know, you use overcooked meat tends to be dry, and it's really just the moisture content coming out. So, but if you use that, again, that equal parts thing, instead of, you know, because it could be a gallon, it could be a quart, it could be a cup. But if you have equal parts of those three, and then 3/4 of that part on sugar and Worcestershire sauce, L&P, you're good. You know, and it's a great little marinade. Most people wouldn't think that lemon juice and basil would do well to flavor marinated steaks, but they do. So, again, I mean, getting back to her original query about, you know, how do I cook with basil? My answer is any way you want. I mean, you know, it really lends itself to, you know, it's a beautiful flavor. It's that anise, that very light anise flavor.
And I'm finding a lot of people are growing basil on their windowsills.
Yeah, well, it grows
so well.
So
they have it during the winter,
yeah.
And it's fresh whenever they want to use it.
Well, here's another, you know, stupid chef tip number 6,487, you know, is that, you know, you can make pesto, let's say, the recipe I gave you. And I don't know if they have them anymore because they have ice cube makers now. But you buy an ice cube tray or two and just fill each one, you know, with a tray and freeze it. And then when you want it, you just pop out one portion. You don't have to unfreeze the whole thing.
So in line with that, I'm not sure if it was you that said it. And again, with these deli containers, it's not unusual for people to boil pasta, and I guess sometimes people put oil and salt in it, but when it's all said and done, they save the water and use it to flavor other dishes in the future. So they freeze it in the plastic container, or like you said, in ice cube containers, and then they might pop them out, put them in a Ziploc bag, keep them in the freezer, and just throw one or two to their liking into their preparation that day.
Yeah, I would do that with stock. I'm not so sure I would do it with pasta water. Pasta water is used as a thickening agent, and it doesn't have much flavor. It's just salt, you know, but you use it as a thickening agent, because what happens is the pasta throws off, you know, pastiness, you know. Yeah, starches. And you'll see most recipes for pasta will always say and add a little of the water back in. And that's basically just creating a sauce, you know. Let's say you're going to use butter or olive oil, it emulsifies it a little bit, you know, so you have that clinginess to the pasta that you want for the sauce. You don't want the sauce to be...
When I leave the pot on the stove overnight, I wake up, there's usually like a skin over the water.
Yeah, well, you don't want that skin, you know, that's it's not what you want, you know. If you have skin on your water, you're probably not cooking. Don't listen to Stu if he's giving you any recipes here.
Well, see, that's very funny you say that. So then we just, the last email that we're going to read this morning is from Stephen Solomon, who writes to us often, but we're...
No relation to me, by the way.
The voice from beyond.
There you go. But this is a man from my own heart, because he talks about cooking in his toaster oven. So I've graduated from the toaster oven to the microwave, but now I've morphed into my air fryer.
Look out.
But Stephen sends to us, has Tom tried Beyond Meat or the Impossible Burger? Although they don't have the same taste of meat, I'm cutting back on hamburgers and learning to broil the plant-based burgers in our toaster oven.
Yeah, I just got some Impossible Burgers delivered to the club. And when I looked on the, I was curious about it, you know, the ingredients, this, that, and the other thing. And aside from that, you know what I found out?
What?
They're worse for you than hamburgers. They got more fat, more sodium. It's loaded, you know? It's like, I think it's just I don't know. I think it's a fraud, tell you the truth. I mean, you know, okay, you don't want to eat meat, fine. But, you know, it's certainly not healthy. You know, if you want to be healthy, you know, eat broccoli or something, you know? I don't understand why the vegetarian movement strives to make everything taste like non-vegetarian stuff. If, you know, vegetarians were so enamored about the taste of vegetables, you would think they would just go with it, you know? But yeah, vegetarian bacon, you have vegetarian burgers. It's just silly to me.
I remember hearing or reading something that the plant-based meats are, I guess, made with beans, very earthy, and they're very salty. To overcome that. So, and it's funny because the first time I really got involved with plant-based meats was Burger King. They make a Whopper now as the Impossible Whopper or whatever.
Yeah.
And I made the comment to Kerry, and I said, you know, it's a little salty. And then again, I thought I heard this conversation that it needs to overcome that. And I was wondering... just what you were talking about, the realities of healthiness or whatever. But Kerry came back to me and she said this, and you would probably know this better, and you've talked about it in an abstract way about aging meats and how it's actually decaying meat.
Yeah.
But Kerry was saying that when you eat meat, it sort of stays in your gut for a couple of days or something until it gets totally
broken down. Right. Well, this is why, you know, when I was growing up, we always had salad after dinner. And when I got my first restaurant job, I thought it was weird that people were going to the salad bar before dinner. I thought they had it all backwards, you know, which it turns out I think they do now. I mean, and I didn't realize why that was. That was the way I grew up. And, you know, we always had salad after dinner. But it's a cleansing thing, you know, because the greens are what, you know, it's the Roto-Rooter system for your innards, you know. Vegetables and salad is like almost like a cleansing thing after a big meal.
So that's an incredible conversation. So, you know, our shows are very scripted, so, you know, I was leading into this anyway. But,
yeah, no, it's you were brilliant in your direction.
But here's my thought process. If when I'm cooking meat...
Right.
There's a rendering of fat,
yeah,
and when it cools down,
right,
it's
hardens,
just,
yeah,
and supposedly that's what clogs up our bodies,
yeah.
So somebody told me that they have like hot tea after their steak or meat,
right,
to try to cleanse their system, but it's not like immediate cleansing, so
yeah,
that doesn't really add up.
No, it cleanses your bladder.
But you really have to wonder about that. You know, again, if I'm making meat sauce, I'll saute the meat,
right,
and drain all the fat,
yeah,
and I'll put it into one of those deli containers, and then you have like what's considered, I guess, the smaller of the two. I guess there's like three sizes. There's a one that's it's 2 inches, one that's 4 inches, and then there's the
big
one.
Cup, two cups and a quart.
So the you can have a small one fill up with the fat, but the fat gets to be
hard. That's saturated fat,
and that stays in your body. How do you get it out?
You get it out with salad. I mean, that's the, the salad is the great cleanser. I mean, vegetables too, but salad after a meal makes eminent sense. And then I found out later that's kind of like the European model.
So is this like a natural probiotic?
Yeah, kind of. This is Dr. Tommy's, prescription since we're in medicine today,
Food, wine, lifestyle, and medical tips.
Well, and now I'm going to segue into something that happened to me in the last couple of weeks that I haven't told anybody about. But my daughter, who has become, since I'm not married, she's become the nag to me. I mean, she nags me all the time about, health stuff. And I'm indestructible. I've always been indestructible, but she's always worried that I'm going to die prematurely. And then what is she going to do, So anyway, she gets me to go to this cardiologist, this guy that she sees, every once in a while. So I go to see this guy, and we're talking. And I have some issues in my family on my father's side, My father died pretty young. He was like 64. And some of his family side had some heart issues.
Now you got me worried. So after your story, I'll tell my story.
So we sound like two old guys in Florida now talking about, whose affliction is worse than whose, Anyway, so I go to this guy, and they send me in for what they call a calcium score, which I have no idea what it is, right? They stick me in a tube. They take a picture. I'm out of there in 3 minutes. And all of a sudden, he calls me up. He says, calcium score came back. We got to get you a nuclear stress test. I'm like, anytime I hear nuclear, I'm like, I'm going to blow up. What's this, Anyway, everybody knows what it is. They make you walk on a treadmill until your blood pressure is about to blow the top of your head off, and then they inject you with a dye, and then they take a bunch of pictures, right? So I go there, right, thinking, this is like, he must have seen something. I'm going to wind up with stents. I don't need this, So I'm all worried, right? So I get the test results back.
No stress in your life until they made the doctor's appointment.
I know, exactly. You want a stress test? Do you know what I do for a living? I serve sea bass to ungrateful people.
It's a little too fishy.
Every day is a stress test for me,
I know Tom Shawdell. Yeah. He would put me in my table.
Yeah. So anyway, I get the results back, and I believe that the term is flying colors. I passed this whole thing with flying colors. Turns out I'm normal, which is most people won't believe, but at least my heart is normal, right? So the doctor says to me, later on, he says, all right, well, let's talk about, diet you're going to have going forward. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm going with what got me here. What got me here was a bunch of red wine, cheese, and foie gras. That's how I got a normal. I'm not going to give now. So I'm talking to my friend Bill, who is in the restaurant business also with a daily stress test.
Bill Holden?
Yeah, Billy Holden. We were playing golf last week. And he goes, how'd the stress test come out? I said, I passed. Everything's normal. He goes, this is ridiculous. He goes, me, I got nothing but trouble. I got stents in here. All I do is eat vegetables. I haven't had a drop of alcohol in 30 years. You're a maniac, You're fine. I said, eating healthy and living well is good, but it's not worth dying for, Bill. You should really, consider my diet.
So now you got me all worried. You said the number 64.
Yeah.
So when this show airs on Sunday, I will be 64.
Really?
And the Beatles wrote a song for me.
Yeah.
When I'm 64.
When I get older, losing my hair. Well, I'm there
already.
It's
too late for that. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Many years from now. Well, again, yeah. they were premature.
Paul didn't know you very well.
Will you still be sending me a Valentine, birthday greetings, a bottle of wine? So this was like psychic. Here I am with the great Long Island-centric maven, Tom Shawdell. We talk about wine a lot.
Yeah.
And here it is.
You're not going to sing it, are you?
No, I'm just going to recite it. If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? I always let you into the studio, Tom.
That's true.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Are you trolling for a free meal? Is that what you're doing? That's what it sounds like to me. I would feed you anytime, Stu. Yeah, so it's summertime, and it just dawned on me that it's not for long. We're almost to August here.
Well, I guess
it's August, right? It's August 1st today.
Yep.
So So the unofficial start of summer is Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
Which seems forever ago.
I know, right?
So now here we are. So that means June and July have gone.
Yeah.
So maybe two-thirds of the summer
shot.
Are
completely
gone.
Shot. And it's depressing to me because I haven't really gotten a chance to play too much golf this year, which I love to do, obviously. It's a nice little 3.5 hour respite from the insanity that's my life. But yeah, it's over. But the reason I brought it up is because I'm thinking about food and, you know, and transitioning into fall. And I'd love to, you know, I love the summer ingredients. I love the corn. I love the tomatoes. I love the, you know, the basil. I love the lobster. I like the fish that are around now. And it's so much fun. I just want to encourage everybody to take advantage of it while it's still here. Visit a farm stand and get some real corn, you know.
So that's what I want to ask you real quick. So I feel that I've neglected the summer. Mm-hmm. It's just happening too quickly.
Yeah.
And one of my loves is fresh corn.
Yeah.
And again, I'm a simpleton. I talked a few minutes ago that I use the microwave a lot. I will take an ear of corn, take right. it out of the husk, wrap it in a damp paper towel, and put it into the microwave. And I have my own way of doing it. Now, I know I'm not crazy because Eddie Van Halen, one of his most favorite meals was a hot dog, a Hebrew National hot dog, that he put in the microwave for 1 minute and 48 seconds. And the microwave was the perfect means of him cooking his hot dog. So I do my corn. So I'm not the only one. There's at least was Eddie Van Halen. But what I want to go to is Stu Leonard's always talks about agriculture
right.
and food and healthy and tasty. So he mentioned something about the ultimate corn being hybrid corn that's white and yellow. And what do you know about that and your thoughts?
Just known as different, I want to say, breeds or hybrids of corn. I mean, you know, you have, I don't remember the names of them offhand. I don't pay too much attention to it. But there are different strains of corn out there, you know. You can see it in the fall. You get that Indian corn in the fall.
Now I'm getting
inedible,
nervous.
You know?
Here we go to the medical thing again. Strains. Everybody's talking about strains of COVID. Now you're talking about strains of corn.
Could you put a blinker on if you're going to take a turn like that, please? Let me know. How did I get the COVID? I was in the middle of corn conversation. I guess it begins with a C. Anything that begins with a C is
it? No, it's about the strains.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure it is.
Different strains of corn and different types of corn. How about types? And now we're going to get into blood, right? Type A, B, C. This is, different, you know, like yellow corn, white corn. I'm just concerned with sweet corn. I don't care what color it is. It doesn't matter to me. I just want the flavor to be right. And you know, when you go to the supermarket, chances are you can get some good corn, I'm sure. But your best bet is the farm stands. And this time of year to visit a farm stand in I would prefer the North Fork only because the South Fork, the traffic is insane right now. And I had to go there a couple of weeks ago, and it was like it took me 20 minutes to get from, you know, one light to another. Anyway, but the farm stands, you know, that's the place to go. I mean, they have great corn out there this time of year. They have fabulous tomatoes. And the other thing I'll talk about tomatoes, you know, I always talk about don't use them until July and August when they really come out. Don't refrigerate them either, man. When you buy a tomato, just leave it on the shelf. Bring it home. Eat it as fast as you can. But don't refrigerate it. Kind of breaks up the flavor somehow, you know. But there were all sorts of beautiful tomatoes out there. I was out there about 2 weeks ago, and they were just starting to come out. But now it's kind of high time, you know. This is July and August is in September, tomato season, so go nuts. I did a dish the other night with black sea bass, which I think is one of the local treasures out here. You know, the meat is so mild and beautiful and white and flaky, and it doesn't take a lot of cooking. It goes pretty quickly. But I took like sliced garlic, and I sautéed it down in a little olive oil until it just started to brown a little bit. And then I hit it with white wine to stop the cooking process. And I took a bunch of just barely cut up, you know, chunked tomatoes of different colors, like green, yellow, red, you know, all these little hybrid you know, heirloom tomatoes, and put that in there with a little bit of lemon juice. And I reduced that down till it was almost syrupy, you know, not quite, you know, like syrupy, but, you know, very, very viscous. And then I just mounted that with butter, with unsalted butter and some fresh basil. And I put that on top of the fish. And we served the fish. I served the fish on a little polenta, which is corn-based anyway, you know, polenta and a little bit of sautéed spinach. But it was this beautiful, fresh, summery, you know, it just light, you know, healthy, except for the butter, dish that, you know, you could easily, you know, replicate at home. You know, basically all you have to do is take that fish and put a little bit of white wine on it, a little bit of salt and pepper, and just put it in the oven. It takes about 5 minutes. It's not, you know, doesn't take long to cook. But that sauce, that pan sauce, is very easy and quick to make. And I'll go through it again. You take a little bit of sliced garlic. And if you want to write it down, you take a little bit of sliced garlic and saute it and a little bit of extra virgin olive oil just till it gets a little color on it. And then hit it with a splash of white wine and a little bit of lemon juice. And let that cook down and reduce it by about half. And then you just add these chunks of beautiful, you know, different colored tomatoes in that. And, you know, then as soon as it warms through, you just hit it with some whole butter. You know, you don't want to boil it because you don't want the butter to clarify. You just want to swirl it around until the butter melts and thickens that sauce. And you're ready to go. A little bit of basil in there. You know, Angela wanted to learn how to cook about basil. Here's another recipe with basil. You throw some basil leaves in there and just drop that right over your fish. It's fabulous.
So you mentioned Angela again, and I'm getting very anxious because of her email. She sent us these beautiful pictures, and I think we need to heed to your daughter Courtney's advice and suggestion that we finally get a Facebook page.
Yeah.
Because if you go back to Thanksgiving, you were kind enough to record three segments about preparing side dishes for Thanksgiving. And I thought that was so enlightening. It was so cool to watch you so effortlessly prepare these three side dishes, and now you're just talking about this other dish. It would be so cool if we could commit to getting a web page up, and then obviously your time is more best spent in the kitchen than orating to our audience, but they would get a kick out of a visual of you in the kitchen.
I'd be happy to do it, but you're going to have to do it because, I mean, my technology knowledge, I just learned how to get messages from my phone. You know what I mean? I'm just like, what do you call it? I'm like the Amish.
We'll end up doing if it works out for you, and the management team over at the club is our video guy, Joe, who did a really great job last time. He and I will come spend some time with you.
Yeah, I can do that.
And if we did one a month or whatever, it would be one more than we've ever done. But to share it with the audience, I really think they would get a kick. And this is something that you excel in because, again, it's all about Angela this week. She alludes to,
big difference.
Jewel. And one of the greatest things about Jewel is you had that common table, which was right in front of the open kitchen.
Right.
And there, you were on display for everybody because everybody says, I know Tom Shordell.
Dinner and a show.
And then they would point, you know, to you or whatever. But again, to watch you cook, it's an art form. It really is.
Oh, it's fun to do. And, you know, just thinking about it for a second, you know, we could do one at the club. We could do one at a Mono. We could do one at the Lure. You know, and we could even do guest kitchens. I can go into other, you know, I know enough chefs on Long Island where we go into their kitchen and watch them do it too, you know. I was just out to Osteria Umbra, you know, my friend Marco Pellegrino's place in Smithtown. If you love Italian food and real Italian food, I'm not talking about chicken parmesan and veal rollatini. I'm talking about real Italian food. Get there sooner rather than later. He's a brilliant cook. He's the nicest human being.
What was the name again?
Osteria Umbra. It's on Terry Road in Smithtown. His wife is the pastry chef. She's phenomenal. They're just a hell of a team. And so anyway, he asked me to do a guest chef dinner with him at the restaurant. So we're going to pull that off in the fall, and I'll get to you with
a
date.
Well, then, again, maybe
we
can get Joe to come out and video that. And again, just any content would be so cool.
Yeah, so I'm gonna do a dinner with him, and he goes to me, so Tom, I'm assuming you're a fisher guy. Everybody telling me you're a fisher guy, you know. So you do the fish, I do the pasta. I'm like, I would bow to your pasta knowledge for sure, you know. Just a sweet man and a brilliant cook. You should check it out if you ever get a chance.
Well, he's a great local chef. I have to ask you, I think you brought this name up in the past, but I saw something on the news this morning, and they mentioned celebrity chef Danny Myers.
Danny Myers, a restaurant. Oh, he's not a chef.
Oh, he's an owner.
Yeah, he's an owner. He's kind of famous for Union Square Cafe and MARTA. He has the MoMA at the. He's got a bunch, but his big thing was Shake Shack. He's the guy that he was a very high end restaurant guy who wrote a lot of books on hospitality. He's very, very big on hospitality. He's probably the foremost authority, honestly, on that. But the odd thing is he made all his money with Shake Shack. I mean, the public offering, I think he made $400 million or something.
Really?
Like, yeah. You know, so
which brings me back to, I was watching another segment on TV, and we were talking about plant-based meat substitutes.
Right.
And there's a couple of chains of fast food restaurants. They're owned by the same person, but they're both, again, non-meat establishments. And they incorporate actually like free workouts or something as part of the restaurant. You know, it's like almost going to the gym. There's no membership. But at the same time, you know, there's, again, all these different plant-based items. And
you know, I know myself, when I go to McDonald's, I always do a couple of push-ups in the parking lot before I go in there and get my big
plan. Only you, Tom. Only you.
I actually don't eat McDonald's. You know, the only time I've ever eaten it is I used to go – a friend of mine lived upstate, and I used to go up to visit him for a couple of days. And, you know, he'd be on the road there. And, you know, if you miss Sbarro's, you know, because each one of these, like – comfort station places, you know, along the highways, they have different, you know, food things in them. So Sbarro's is the only one that I would eat because you're going to get a piece of pizza, some chicken or whatever, you know. If you miss Sbarro's, you were screwed. It was always McDonald's or Burger King, you know.
So wait, I have to throw two things at you. Hopefully I remember the second one, but Panera. Not that we want to bash them, but is a Panera bagel really a bagel?
Yeah, I mean, they're bread people. I mean, you know, it's you know, it's like, you know, Panera Bagels is like Mama Goldberg's pizza. You know what I mean? You just, if I'm going to a bagel, I want a Steen or a Stein or a, you know, I mean, I want ethnicity, you know? If I'm going to an Italian restaurant, I want a vowel at the end of, you know, it's just, it is what it is. And maybe it's all perception. Maybe it is. But would you eat Mama Goldberg's pizza?
Probably not.
No, I know. Me too.
So, and then my mind goes to bagels. They were around Jewish immigrants on the Lower East Side or whatever.
Yeah.
Who sat on it and created the flagel?
I think it was the heaviest woman in the bakery. You know?
That's chauvinistic.
It is. I know. But it's the
so
truth.
You mentioned something about upstate. So I had occasion to travel out to, I guess it's considered Western Pennsylvania, something around Scranton, sort of on its way up to Binghamton or whatever. I'm really not good on geography, and I'm actually...
It's apparent, yeah.
I'm very anxious to look at a map to understand. But I went to two diners, and I don't know what it is in that area, but they always have a pizza oven. Now, on Long Island, there's almost a diner in every town.
Yeah.
And I think I can assuredly claim that none of them have a pizza oven.
No, I wanted to make a diner different, but apparently Long Island didn't want it.
Right.
You know? So
then, again, you go to this area of the foothills of Pennsylvania or whatever, and again, the diner, if it's an elaborate townhouse diner,
mm-hmm.
one was,
yeah.
in the town of Honesdale, Pennsylvania, again, pizza oven. Then there was we were in Thompson, Pennsylvania, a much more rural area, and it was just like, it was actually a house. It was like a regular residential block.
Right.
There was a house that was converted into a restaurant, a diner, they called it. And one of the big categories on their menu was pizza. And I was telling the proprietor, a lovely, nice lady, woman, and I told her that we do this radio show here on Long Island. And she goes, oh, you got to check out my kitchen. I said, well, you know, where do you do all this stuff? And, do you prepare your own dough?
Yeah.
And she took me in the back, and she had this huge room where she rolled out the dough. And she had one of those old big mixing machines whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And she told me, I don't know what the process, maybe you can share, what you let the dough settle.
It's got to rise. Got to rise.
But she had... I think it was two or three stations of a pizza oven mm-hmm. to cook, and that was a big deal. And the front part of the restaurant was a griddle.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet this pizza preparation area was incredibly large. I don't know what the deal is up there.
I still think that there's room for a real fine diner. I mean, one of the best restaurants I was ever in my life was a place called the Fog City Diner in California. I'm not sure if it's – I think it's still there. But they basically – it was a restaurant masquerading as a diner. You could get breakfast items, you know, pretty much all day. But you went in there and, you'd get like sea bass. You know, you'd have real entrees, you know, and they had a raw bar. It was phenomenal, you know. So
It's funny.
People on Long Island, they have a specific, you know, agenda when it comes to diners, and you ain't changing it, man.
But this was funny. The waitress at the diner saw me looking at the sandwich menu, and it was breakfast time, and she goes, "Sir, I'm sorry, you know, you can't order." I said, "I just want a grilled cheese sandwich. It's like, give me toast and just throw."
Yeah, you're one of them, huh? Haven't I taught you anything? Yeah, it's funny how, you know, you can serve. People eat weird, man. I mean, you know, sometimes at the club I'll get an order for scrambled eggs at like 2:30 in the afternoon. I'm like, really?
And I got to tell you, you go to these diners, you never know what your guests are going to order. So I've been with Carrie for like 15 years. I've never seen her get a pastrami sandwich. Never. The only thing that came anything close is her father, God rest his soul, he passed away a couple of years ago, 96 years old. For his birthday, all she would do was go to Pastrami King in Merrick and get him some fresh cut tongue.
Yeah.
But here we are in this diner, and again, I'm telling you, there's you know, the pizza menu, and her daughter was ordering something else. And all of a sudden she goes, "Oh, I'm going to have a pastrami sandwich."
Yeah. That's my guilty pleasure. Pastrami sandwich and Oreos, you know, sometimes not in that order. But, there's something about pastrami. It's the, I don't know if it's the salt, the fat, whatever, the cure. There's something about it. It's just the best, you know. But you can't, I don't do it often. It's like, I get the wiggy for Jewish soul food about maybe five times a year where I go wandering at the Benz with this look on my face.
You just said soul food, and my hearing says salt food, which is very funny because usually the brisket, the corned beef, the pastrami is a little on the salty. Yeah. I got to have it with coleslaw. Coleslaw sort of
cuts it down.
And then a little bit of mustard for tang.
Yep.
Sometimes maybe some Russian.
Not only for tang, for blood pressure.
We come full circle once again.
Colicky babies. It cures everything. It's like global warming. I mean, it's the cause of everything. It cures global warming. It's everything.
So here, as we get close to the end of the show, we've talked about mustard so many different times. Let's just take mustard and ketchup, because I did mention a couple of weeks ago that there was a ketchup at Trader Joe's that included summer truffle or something.
Yeah, no, thank you.
So we'd love to hear from everybody about their favorite mustard or their favorite ketchup. Is it Heinz 57 or it's Hunt's or whatever?
Yeah.
What's your favorite ketchup? What's your favorite mustard? And that would be cool to share. Fire@WHLI.com. Fire@WHLI.com. And the most important thing is share with everybody that the show is moving till Sundays at 9 a.m., so from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you missed any of the episodes, go to WHLI.com and stay tuned for next week's grand, grand announcement about WHLI.
All right. For all you who aren't listening today because you're at 8 o'clock, we're going to close the show, thank God, with Tom's three keys to life, which are, life is too short to do a show with Stu. Treat every meal like it was your last, and keep chocolate in your life as important as
and
sex
Angela,
and pizza.
Thanks for bringing the church into the show, because here, all of a sudden, Tom's closing it out with thank God.
That's right. Goodbye.
Sweet Fancy Long Island is the award-winning dessert and pastry company that has become one of the hottest sources for bakery treats available for delivery on Long Island. Each mouth-watering creation has a personality all its own, teasing the palate with its rich flavors, complex textures, and eye-catching presentations. All items at Sweet Fancy Long Island are made 100% from scratch using the highest quality ingredients: Belgian chocolate, European butter, vanilla beans from Tahiti, and the richest, most flavorful fruits available. They're clients can enjoy any one of our delectable confections from one-of-a-kind pastries, specialty and occasion cakes, French macarons, and karma cups. Their signature line includes an assortment of charming personalized size desserts served in miniature mason jars. The Sweet Fancy Long Island team takes great pride in presenting a unique, delicious, and elegant dessert experience and works closely with every client to create a memorable dessert that will add an exciting dimension to any celebration. Presently, the work of Sweet Fancy Long Island have been found in some of the area's top restaurants, country clubs, gourmet shops, catering facilities, and Food Network. Go to sweetfancyli.com to order online or to view their incredible gallery of desserts.
Amano Osteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shordell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Osteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese, and winemakers, marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remains open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Osteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matatuck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at amanorestaurant.com.